I am going to read from the book of Daniel this morning, chapter 2, verses 44 through 47. I'm reading from the Common English Bible. But in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will raise up an everlasting kingdom that will be indestructible. Its rule will never pass to another people. It will shatter other kingdoms. It will put an end to all of them. It will stand firm forever. Just like you saw when the stone, which was cut from the mountain, but not by hands, shattered the iron, bronze, clay, silver, and gold. A great God has revealed to the king what will happen in the future. The dream is certain. Its meaning can be trusted. Then King Nebuchadnezzar bowed low and honored Daniel. The king ordered that grain and incense offerings be made to Daniel. The king declared to Daniel, "No doubt about it, your God is God of gods, Lord of kings, and a revealer of mysteries, because you are able to reveal this mystery." This is the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
Amen. I need to place blame somewhere. So I am going to blame the great marketing team at Portland Leather for my wide variety of handbags. They are really good at their jobs, and I got to give them props for how good they are at their jobs, because, you know, strategists who come up with our marketing, they keep up with our trends and our needs. They've got their finger on the pulse of the world. They know our emotions. They know our responses. And I blame the geniuses at Portland Leather Goods and their marketing team for how big my collection has gotten. I pick on myself from time to time because I deserve it. I'm pretty fond of my favorite purses, and my collection's not getting smaller. And I know that I should be content with the one or few that I have, and yet, whenever I have a minute, I'm right back on their website. It's partially, I blame, great marketing. In this day and age where we live in the artificial intelligence, Facebook doesn't let my feed be filled with my friends and family and what they're doing. Instead, once in a while, I tune in enough to think, because, I mean, most of the time, don't we just kind of scroll through Facebook, and it's just sort of, it's our fidget device to scroll through and look at pictures. And about 90-some percent of what I see is purses, bags, people selling them, people showing them. It's never dormant. And the geniuses at Portland Leather Good, they know how to get me. They show sneak peeks, just a corner of a new design that's coming out that I've never seen before. They show new color. They tell about sales like the one coming up this Thursday. They let us know that something brand new is coming and limited edition. You better hurry while supplies last. And I let myself get lured in. I've said many times when I'm carrying a new bag again, man, PLG's marketing people are really good at their jobs. Good marketing encourages us to take action. It encourages us to be loyal to one brand. I've pretty much sold everything else I ever had. There's competition in everything in our world. In fact, anything we can think of, we could probably find it pretty quick, can't we? Just the other day, I said to John, "You know, I think I need an armoire. What do you think the armoire's for?" My bags. "I think I need an armoire, dear, to put my bags in." And you know, in not that long ago, if a person would have thought of something like that, they might have had to say, "When can we get to Kansas City and look at a furniture store?" But we don't have to do that anymore. I just pop right over to Marketplace. Open up Marketplace, and there are dozens and dozens of armoires within 20 miles, and some of them are even free. Believe it or not, I still don't have one. We can have almost anything we can think of, and we have choices. We aren't just stuck with one. We can find anything quickly. In the pre-digital world, we can't even hardly imagine the pre-digital world anymore, can we? And I always think that, you know, when you say to a kid, pre-digital, they probably think dark ages. And as I was typing that, I thought it really was dark because our screens light up the room. We don't visualize ancient times as being as tempting because they didn't have everything at their fingertips. But you know what humans have always been really good at doing? Finding a way to live in excess. Whatever we have in front of us, we can find ways to create new and improved and have more. And we're really good at saying, oh, this is rare. You're going to need it. Our ancient ancestors were faced with the same problems that we have today. I was in class this week, and we share ideas in our little breakout sessions. And one of the guys in the class said, I put a card out to all of my church, and I asked them to tell me what things they wondered about their Bible. What was the biggest thing that they wondered about? And he said, the number one question that he received back on this card was, is the Bible still relevant today? Number one question. I would have had a lot of questions. I'm not sure that would have been one. So if anybody doesn't know, yes, it is. It is relevant. 100% relevant. And in fact, if you dig deeper and deeper into the Word and really learn what was happening at their time and what people were doing and thinking and the systems they were setting up, it not only is relevant, but it is even more relevant the more you study it. You find out that we really are the same. People, although our toys have new names, have not changed. We are still people who like things and like to have plenty of them. So when we get together in church, what we do when we look into the Bible is we get into our little scriptural time machine and we travel back into ancient times and we look at how things were and how really they are the same as they are today, and also how we can take the lessons that were learned through the mistakes and the good things and apply them today so that we don't repeat the same mistakes, which we're probably going to do. Anyway, today we step back into the world of Babylon, around 530 BCE, told in the book of Daniel. And I tell you 530 BCE, we're going to take a trip back in time to 530 BCE for just a short time, because honestly, the book of Daniel is written over a very long stretch of time, hundreds of years, probably goes from 530 BCE, if I want to say correctly, it goes to about 160, if I remember what I read. So it's a long period of time that we're going to travel through in the next few weeks. But where the book begins is right during the time of Jerusalem's exile, and exile is a church word. Somebody had another church word at Rich Hill this morning. What was it? I don't know. It looks like omniscience, and I can't remember how she said it, but it meant God knows everything. I said, oh, there's a church word the kids just learned today. Omniscience. Yes. Exile is also a church word. The short explanation of exile is you have the people of Jerusalem, who were people who had grown up in the tradition where God the Creator was their God. And you have the people of Babylon, who grew up with lots of little g's, little gods, who were hand-created gods. And the people of Jerusalem had been overtaken by Babylon, and the folks in that region were taken hostage and moved to Babylon, where they didn't have anything. Their faith was gone, their homes were gone, their jobs were gone. The victory in Babylon was to steal the people of Jerusalem. So the king of Babylon was Nebuchadnezzar, and King Nebuchadnezzar sent his advisors out into the kingdom and said, bring me back a variety of young men from lots of different places, young being probably teenagers. They're coming for your boys. And he wanted to bring only the handsome ones, only the strong ones, because these young men he could shape into being the folks that would be in his royal court. And he wanted to teach them for special services. Among the men taken were these four: Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Daniel. And I really have been trying to record those names to my memory, because that's not the names I remember most of them by. We'll get back to that. And I think we should. And you'll understand why as I go through the message. Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Daniel. These four fit the physical description, and they came from the tribe of Judah, Jewish people. And their families were in Babylon, relocated to the new city where they had very little. No jobs, no future prospects. And we've got kids, grandkids amongst us, and we think about what it's like for them to be a teenager, right? When they're getting out of school and think of what they're going to do with their future. Can we imagine our teenagers being ripped out of their society, placed in another, and us looking around thinking, man, they don't have a lot to look forward to. This was the world that these young men lived in. And here they were brought to the palace where everything was new and exciting. If there was something you could want, you could have it at the palace. You had access to more than you could ever imagine. And it might not have been a PS5 and it might not have been a PLG bag, but it would be things that men of that age would have liked. Would it have been intriguing? If you were in the place of the teens? Tempting? Well, as soon as these young men arrived on scene for this program, the king offers them every food. You can indulge yourselves in the royal food. All you want to eat, all you want to drink, all the choicest wine. And remember what we've been talking about for all these weeks going up, coming up, food? And food was something that was hard to find, something people didn't have access to. And these young men, rags to riches, in their laps, beginning with full bellies of everything they could imagine. Sound tempting? When we first did this Bible study, I looked in my book, it was 2018, when we did this Bible study on Daniel. At about that time, Brennan would have been 16. And I went home, and I love that we took so many notes in that book, because I went home and I said, if I were creating a program, and I wanted it to appeal to you, 16-year-old, young, strong, handsome, if I do say so myself, man, what would it have that you would want to participate? And he said, number one, food. Good food. I want to be there for the food. Second, I want it to be fun. But okay, fine. He said, I don't want anybody to get hurt. So food, fun, and I don't want anybody to waste my time. I want to grow. I want to know more when I leave. I want it to have benefited me in some way in my life. So according to my son's answer, just back in 2018, these trainees were marketed with things that were very relevant even today. Good food and something that will prosper you for your whole life. You're going to learn a program and you're going to have job security working in the king's palace. No waste of time. It was meant to entice these young men to be ready, to bend to whatever the king would like them to do. But for Daniel, something about eating all of this food just didn't feel right to him. And he felt like he couldn't stay connected to his God if he was indulging in all of this rich food stuff. And so he said, I don't really want to eat this food. Can we be allowed to only eat vegetables and only drink water? Everybody want to sign up for that one? No. That's what he asked for. And the man in charge of these four said, well, you know, I'm a little skeptical about this, but I tell you what, I'll let you try it out. And if you're able to do it and not get weak and not fall behind the other guys, then I'll allow it. And so they did, and it turned out that they ended up being the strongest ones. Well, the next thing that happened was these four were given new names. That's why we talked about them and why I really think, gosh, we should call them all by their original names. Hananiah, was meant God has been gracious, but the king wanted to change his name to Shadrach, knowing these names now, aren't we? Which meant inspired of Aku, Michelle, which meant like God, and Hananiah would be Shadrach, Michelle would be Meshach, which meant belongs to Aku, and Azariah would become Abednego, meaning servant of Nego. And their names previously all had godly meanings. God has been gracious. Who is like God? God has helped. And then finally, Daniel, his name meant God is my judge, but the king changed it to Belshazzar, which meant Bel will protect. And in doing this, King Nebuchadnezzar tried to take their identity, who they were, their whole connection to God. He wanted to take that part of them and rename it to be something that said, I'm going to protect you with my little gods. He wanted to be their God in a way. And so he wanted to change their identity. So from the food to the names, he was trying to shape them. And this probably appealed to so many of the men in the program. We don't really know what any of the others did because nobody else is written to have stood up in the way that Daniel and his friends did. But they would stay, they would cooperate with instruction, they would learn, they would be in the councils, but they would not be changed. We have that same thing every day ourselves. We are here. Are we going to let the world change us and remove us from our identity in God? Or are we going to stick with the marketing program? Believe in the marketing program that sells us the little gods. Daniel didn't do that. And the things that he did do not only set him apart, but drew God's attention. So I'm going to skip just a little bit of the text here and go into the very first test. There was a test that happened after the people got a little bit trained up. So here we go. Ready? Imagine this. I had a really weird dream last night. It was a very powerful dream. I woke up from the dream and I knew in my soul and in my gut that I needed to do something. And I don't really know what I was supposed to do, but there's something big. And I really can't tell you what it is I need to do, and I can't tell you what my dream meant, but I know something is coming. And the thing is, you guys have been my teachers, you guys have been the leaders, y'all have been, you know, my parents, my advisors. I trust you guys to help me with this dream, to understand it, to not get hurt because of it. And so I need somebody in this room to tell me what this dream meant. Quickly. And if you don't, since I trust you so much, something really bad is going to happen to every one of you because nobody is stepping forward. Oh, and I'm not going to tell you what the dream was. First of all, you got to tell me what the dream was. Second of all, you got to tell me what it meant so I can take care of it. Ready? Got anything? No? Why not? This is what the king did. He went to his advisors and he said, I had a dream and you have to tell me. And if not, you're all going to be killed. Also, I'm not going to tell you the dream. You must first tell me the dream and you must tell me what it meant. Well, word about this calamity that was coming to all of these people got back to Daniel, and Daniel says, take me to the king. Let me talk to the king. And he went in and he said, well, this is what I can tell you about your dream. And he was right. And because of what Daniel did, all the lives of all of the people were spared. All of the people in the program were able to continue to live because of Daniel's ability to know and tell about the king's dream. Where all the advisors said, what you're asking us to do is not humanly possible, Daniel was able to do it. Not because Daniel was so special, but because God is so special. And because God doesn't want to take life, but save it. And so because Daniel was in tune with God and stuck by God and relied on the wisdom of God and remained who he was, loyal to God, God gave Daniel the gift of knowing what to say to the king. There's no clever marketing in the whole world, nothing we can accumulate or learn or eat or anything our human hands are capable of that can do the things that Daniel was able to do. But Daniel wasn't able to do it. God was. And what is it that Daniel saw? What did he tell the king? He said, there's a giant warrior, a stature of a warrior. And it's made up of various different materials from head to toe. Some of them are precious metals, some are strong elements, some are attractive but not particularly durable. The different parts of the statue represent kingdoms on earth and our human perspective of who's better or not as good than the other. For instance, I'll play a super quick game, and there's not, you know, we can answer this pretty quick. Have you ever played Would You Rather? Would you rather be the head of a mighty warrior, or would you rather be his toe? Nobody ever answers that. We want to be the head, right? So the statue, the head was the kingdoms that everybody thought was higher than the others. And of course, the toes were the ones people didn't have any, they didn't really think that much about them. And we always think one's going to win over the other, right? And so what he saw was he saw this warrior with all these different parts that were made up of different things and had different hierarchies. And well, the thing was, it didn't matter how high or low any of them were, or how precious, or how strong, or how weak, every single one of them crumbled eventually. So ultimately, Daniel tells the king, the God of heaven will raise up an everlasting kingdom, and it will be indestructible. Its rule will never pass on from human hand to human hand, because it wasn't built with human hands to begin with. And it will be greater than all, and it will stand firm forever. And God's kingdom, not created by human hands, is the one certain thing that can be trusted. Nothing equals that. The king had seen these images, and as I wrote this today, I thought, I wonder if the king was the only one who had the dream, and Daniel was just able to perceive it and say it, but I kind of wonder if maybe, just maybe, do you think Daniel had the same dream? If we think about that, just a minute. Do you think it's possible God gave Daniel the same dream so that he could pass along the information to the king? I mean, it doesn't say that, but I wonder. And imagine these two people in very different places of their lives. How would that dream be perceived by each different person who had it? For the king who had this dream about these nations, and he was hoping he was, you know, up in the crown. And he was hoping that his kingdom was going to be the one, right? And he was had all of his hopes and all of his dreams and everything tied up into his kingdom. For him to hear that all kingdoms would crumble, that'd be kind of scary, devastating. He didn't know what to do with that information. But now from Daniel's perspective, when you have stood by your God and you know your God and you have that dream, do you think that it's the same feeling for Daniel? For Daniel, Daniel knows what kingdom he's been aligned with. So what is scary for the king was probably affirmation for Daniel. I know where I'm going because I know who my king is. Those images and dreams and the message from God is the same today as it was in 530 BCE. We worry about pain and suffering and the future, and we have fear. But people who don't know God don't have the same perception of that as we do. Those who know God know where God is. And those who don't, they're scared. At the beginning of the message, I'd said that Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Daniel appeared to be the people who had nothing going into the palace, right? Their future was so bleak. But I say they were the only four who had the most secure future because they knew where they were going, as we do when we have a relationship with God. So is the Bible relevant? Yes, it's very relevant. This world uses every gimmick, every sales pitch, everything to lure us in and tell us what we need and tell us we need more and more and to tell us there's no security and tell us there's nothing better than what we see or what is around us today. There's nothing more for us to live into. And the Bible is relevant because God is building a kingdom, has been building a kingdom. And it has been standing forever and will continue to live for all of eternity. And Daniel's message reminds us not to be shaped by today, but instead to rely on God's kingdom, which gives us the strength to stand in opposition to those who tell us we need to change everything about who we are. Change what you eat. Change what you call yourself. Change how you dress, where you live. Live into the kingdoms. We only want to live into one. Daniel's commitment to God, his courage, and his reliance on the wisdom also inspires us today so that we can cling to that. But also, in the midst of what Daniel was going through, what Daniel did was take his gift and use it to save others. Because again, God is in the business of saving other people. So what we can do with what Daniel gives us when we go out into the world to be the Daniels is we can take what we understand and the security we know and find those people who are in the program with us that don't know, who are scared because their future isn't so sure, and help save lives. Every one of you can live too, if only you believe in God and in Christ our Savior. May we glorify God and use his wisdom, bringing the gift of salvation and being the Daniels of today. May it be so today and always.